You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and Becky from Central Florida.
Twee McCallum is a sound designer in NYC by way of Baltimore. Her favorite theatrical credits include Frankenstein at Kansas City Rep, which is regional, and My Baby at WP Theater, an off-Broadway festival. She has post-production PA credits for companies like HBO, ABC, and Warner Brothers, and is currently a sound apprentice at an Emmy-winning Foley studio called Alchemy Post. Upcoming projects include sound editing for two podcasts, sound assisting for some big studio films, which are super secret and exciting, and sound design for a radio play produced by National Black Theater this fall. She is the current mentee of Wingspace Theatrical Design, a committee member for Theatrical Sound Designers and Composers Association, and an incoming student for Yale School of Drama's one-year sound program. Welcome, Twee. Those are some really exciting and interesting things that you're doing, so welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much. Exciting and very overwhelming things that I don't think I'm ready for, but thank you. Thank
you. I think you might be our first sound designer we've had on the podcast. Is that true?
For theater, I think, for sure. Yeah.
Yay. Sound designer in comparison to what other things? Other positions.
We've interviewed a lot of live sound engineers and a lot of studio sound engineers, a Foley artist.
Monitor engineers.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
So to talk to somebody who's doing Broadway shows and designing and all that kind of stuff, I work in a small theater once in a while, and I'm always fascinated with like Q Lab and all.
Yeah, man,
that's your world, right?
Yeah, Q Lab.
So I'm actually going.
Are you going to the Q Lab training that our friend is putting on?
I am. I am doing a Q Lab training this week that our friend is putting on. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You should enjoy.
Usually I have an intern sitting with me while I'm running front of house and they're running Q-Lab because I just can't get my brain wrapped around both at the same time.
It's not that hard. It's probably the easiest thing you'll ever learn to do. So, yeah.
It looks pretty super easy. But it just isn't something I know a lot of in-depth things about. So
yeah.
I've always been like, hey, intern, come hang out.
Yeah, and you know, I've been using Pro Tools so much that I've been transitioning into like film and TV stuff, and learning Pro Tools has been so hard that I wish I could use QLab a lot more. I miss doing only QLab stuff, so yeah.
How are you learning Pro Tools?
Well, I've been practicing Pro Tools for the past like 6 months now. Started doing a lot of like online classes, especially since everything has been shut down. A lot of people have been graciously using their talents to teach people for free how to use Pro Tools. So it really started with like online classes, and then I started practicing with people's podcasts and things like that. So it's still very much a work in progress. So I've heard it takes people at least a year before they're like 100% comfortable with Pro Tools, so
yeah, I could definitely
and they'll
see
release
that.
Another update, and then you'll have to learn that. So
yeah, I heard that too.
That's kind of I stopped doing Pro Tools a lot of years ago. Let's be honest, and now I'm back into it, just like you are, and learning some more stuff online because the updates like are way different than when I learned it 100 years ago. So, but it's still very relevant. A lot of people still use it to record live shows and all sorts of stuff. And now, like in theater world, you're using it. So, yeah, very cool.
We teach our live students to use Pro Tools. They get like certified in it and all that jazz.
Awesome. That's cool.
Cool. Well,
so, Twee, one of the main reasons that we have you on our podcast is because you wrote a letter to the theater community on hiring Black designers and creatives. And so you have become a little bit famous in our world because of that letter. We will share a link to it for anyone who hasn't read it in the comments post section of this podcast. But what pissed you off specifically, if you want to share, that had you write this letter? I don't think it was even that like mean, but you wrote your tag to it was "In Angry Artistry." So we want to hear more about it, please.
Yeah, so everything in that letter has been on my mind for at least 4 years now. When I was a student at Howard University, which is a predominantly Black school, and I was in their technical theater program. And even when I was there, there was always this sense of what designers and technicians do is important, and everything should be about the people on stage. So when we would do certain productions, and I would ask my teachers, hey, why aren't there any Black people that y'all are bringing into designing these shows? Again, the answer would always be, it's mostly about the people on stage. And what specifically inspired me to write that letter was because a few weeks after the shutdown happened, a lot of famous Black people who work on Broadway, who are either dancers or performers or singers, started coming forward with their stories about racism that they've experienced during mm-hmm. their shows. I don't know what prompted them to come forward with those stories, but it started to become a trend. And when I watched these amazing videos they created or read the great stories that they wrote, I thought to myself, okay, here we go again mm-hmm. with the people on stage being given these safe platforms to always express mm-hmm. what they go through. And the people who work behind the scenes, I don't think have ever been given a safe platform to express those type of things, especially people of color. So I said to myself, let me write something and share it and see if anyone will read it. I think in hindsight, it was mostly for myself to vent because I kind of always felt I was the only person who felt that way. But thankfully, a lot of people have been able to resonate with what I said. So,
dude, I love that, that you got angry about something and you did something about it, like first, mm-hmm. you know, and then writing that article, I've read it a couple times and, man, it resonated with me because one, being a white woman, you know, I think the only thing that's ever, like, I've looked at, you know, same kind of deal, artists on stage and people getting recognized, and we don't get recognized as technicians or whatever, but because I'm a white woman, I don't see it the way you do, you know, as people of color and whatnot, but I do see the woman aspect, like, women haven't been recognized, you know, for a long time, so mm-hmm. it absolutely opened my eyes a lot to something that I just haven't seen, you know, being a white woman, to be honest. Like, cool. Thank you, Twee, for teaching me that I need mm-hmm. to look deeper, you know, and I need to look backstage and I need to see, you know, how you're being unrepresented or underrepresented. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, for writing that. And then I kind of want to talk, like, what are the responses you've been getting, you know, from people? I'm sure they're broad, but because that was my response, like, oh, wow, okay, that's eye-opening to me. Like, what are some of the other responses you're getting?
Well, you know, I was expecting a lot of, like, angry emails and things like that. So far, everyone who has reached out has been really supportive of me. I think anyone who isn't supportive of what I said is intentionally being quiet about it, and I'm probably like blackballed in some type of way. We'll see in 2 or 3 years how much more work I can get. But I would say the biggest form of support came from the Theatrical Sound Designers and Composers Association. The woman who chairs it right now, Jane Shaw, she's a sound designer with many years of experience. After my letter came out, she kind of like brought me into the group a little closer than what I already was. And everyone part of that group kind of talked me through certain things that I've experienced as a Black woman sound designer. And now a step forward that's being done in response to what I wrote is that I'm a committee member on their equity, diversity, inclusion committee, and we're trying to write some policies that can help move the theater room forward in how they hire not only sound designers, but also Black costume designers and lighting designers and things like that. So I think what I wrote has become this like all encompassing thing, great. Which I'm very happy. Yeah, I'm actually very happy about that. Because I think as designers and even stage managers, electricians, and us craftspeople, I think in general, we all feel as though how we feel about our work is not really important. It is important to us, but it's not important to directors, producers, and people right. like that. So I'm happy that everyone feels represented by what I said.
Was that your intention for writing it at all? Or is that kind of a surprise that came?
You know, when I sent... So this is how the letter became seen by people. I was scrolling through Instagram, and I follow a page called Broadway World. Mm-hmm. And they had spent about a week posting many things in support of what was going on with, like, Black Lives Matter and things like that. And one of their posts was, if there are any Black people who work in theater, who have any type of story they want to share, you can send it to us and we will publish it. So I said, oh, okay, this might be my chance to see if I can get somewhere with this. And I sent it to them and they published it. And I've actually sent that letter to about three other pages before them and nobody wanted to publish it. I won't name drop those pages, but So thanks to Broadway World, I was able to get whatever platform people think I had with writing that letter.
That's awesome. So then from the Broadway World one, the Sound Girls found out about you and did an interview with you, which I thought was great. You were asked a question. It's a common discussion in the industry that once the old guys, quote unquote, are gone, the upcoming younger generation will be able to enact real change for future generations. So we just kind of want to dive in a little bit more about that. Can you speak more to that?
Yeah, I've been asked that question a lot. So the context behind that question, specifically in theater, I don't really think it works the same way in film and TV, but from what I know, there are, let's just say, about 10 white men who work as sound designers on really big productions, mainly across New York City. These white men are between, let's say, 40 and 60-ish years old. They work so much that they take on probably too many shows than what they can handle, and they therefore they bring on a team of people to work with them all the time that do a little more work on the show than the actual designer does. So instead of these people, these designers saying, no, let me not take on 20 shows within mm-hmm. this one season so that somebody else can have a chance to design these shows, they just fill up their plate. And I recall this past theater season, before everything closed down, going on websites of theaters that I really wanted to work for or that I wanted to go see a show at, and seeing even their quote-unquote Black shows, meaning shows where most of the cast were Black or the writer and director were Black, that the entire design team was white. And I'm getting
that's so
a
weird
little
to me.
I'm getting a little emotional talking about it because it's so common. And I would always say to myself, could this artistic director really not find a Black lighting designer or Black costume designer, just one Black designer for this show. So that's really the context behind why people ask that question about when the old white guys age out, can the younger people make change? I don't think it will take those people like aging out or dying off, because I think slowly. I didn't want to say it in a mean way, but
yeah, but that's exactly what people think. Even in like live sound industry, you know, it's a bunch of older white guys. You know, like everybody's just gonna what, hang out and wait for everybody to die so that we all can get a place in the world. Like I think that's dumb. Like, yeah, we're here now.
That's why. Right, and that's why some of the work that TSDCA is doing is so important. I can't share too much, but one of the initiatives TSDCA is trying to design is that for the longer established designers to make some type of promise that whenever theater does open back up, they will bring on at least one black designer with them for every show, and hopefully that designer will be someone that does have a little bit of experience but maybe hasn't gotten their foot into the door of doing broader productions or larger budgeted productions. So it's things like that can really make a big difference in the long run. So it's not necessarily trying to force people to completely stop working because they've worked enough. It's just finding a balance between trying to help everyone else get opportunities who maybe don't have that network or the context of the artistic director who makes all the hiring decisions.
Right. So we finally have an actual inclusive industry.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you're from writing the article, now you're a committee member and a policy writer, which is freaking awesome, girl. I mean, it's just, I'm so excited for you and the direction, you know, that Broadway's taken to do this. And I feel like there's definitely room for improvement in all sound industry related things, you know, so those of us behind the scenes can become all inclusive and diverse as well. You know, and do you see the industry? I mean, obviously, just in this one article, you've already started to see the industry in your world change just in a little bit. Is that like super inspiring to you? Are you nervous about it?
Inspiring, nervous. Is it inspiring? No, it's a little disappointing. My fear is that whenever theater does open back up, who knows how long that's going to take. I think people are going to forget about all of this. So inspiring, no. Yeah, that pretty much sums up how I feel. I really fear that everything that myself and TSDCA are working for now is kind of going to be pushed behind the curtain eventually. So, but I will say it doesn't always take a platform to get things done, because even in real life, in politics, policies get passed without people knowing, and, yeah, and things change without people being loud about it. So it's more about seeing things actually take place instead of, you know, all of the lights and glamour that go on before something happens. So
how do you think that we can help, like all of us out here that are listening, you know, how can we be of help to maybe keep the fire burning, you know, and not, I don't know how to say that, but not just let it go by the wayside.
How not to be complacent. Yeah.
Yeah.
How to be like actively contributing to your things that you're passionate about, or things that we should all be passionate for.
That's a good question. I think one thing that would help is if people would just flood all of the companies that they work for or they want to work for with some type of letter or something that simply expresses, hey, whenever things go back to normal, I would like to see you hire this amount of this type of person. I don't think that people who do what we do, like designers and technicians, have really voiced that to theater companies, film companies, and things like that. I think those voices are always, again, the directors and producers to kind of push their own needs of what they want to see on stage. I think it's really up to us to constantly be in the ear of these companies to say, hey, this is what we want. And I think it would be received very well if, for example, one of the theaters that I really want to work for, if I sent them something saying, hey, could you make a promise to hire at least one more woman this season than what you hired last season? I think something simple like that would be received very well. So
yeah, and I think people have the time to write that into their policies right now, and the time to assess, you know, to sit down and say, hey, you know what, we don't do that. So that's great. That's great advice. Thank you for that. I was, my brain just started going crazy thinking about all the different people I could write. And I was like, okay. So thank you.
I mean, we want to do what we can to support you. So would you be willing to, or maybe you already have some kind of letter that is like a generic letter that we can write, or maybe we can do it together so that we can start sending this stuff out, because everything's on hold right now. Yeah. And so instead of just letting it go by the wayside, because they would have been hiring for next season in the past couple of months. So I haven't been in theater in a while, but I'm sure that they have not been sending out those letters and like looking for people. So if we can plan for, God, I don't even know what they're going to do for this, you know, the spring season or, you know, summer season has probably been a complete wash for everyone. So maybe in this time we can get together, write letters that are maybe a little bit generic so we can send them out and then send them to our contacts and forward them, because the only way we'll get anything to change is if we do something. If we hope or even just complain, I mean, that doesn't get anywhere. You wrote a letter and you are getting shit done now, which is fabulous, because so many times our voices go unheard. So we're proud of you for doing that, especially when you're worried it could impact your work. I hope it's the opposite. I hope that it will help you get more work, because they show that you give a shit. And that's so much bigger and then so much more important for us, especially when we're looking for people to hire. Like, do they give a shit? Does it matter what they do, or are they just going to be someone who does a half-assed job, like you said? Mm-hmm. All those guys and people in general who just take on everything. We've talked about those, like, hoarders so much, Becky. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
we've talked about it, like, endlessly, but if we can do something to be proactive, that would be awesome. And hopefully make that change.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
I feel like that's part of it, right? Like, all of us, even women in sound and yada yada, not like sound girls and I don't know who else, you know, like, we've all talked about the problem for a very long time. Everybody has, right? In like, Black Lives Matter has talked about the problem for years. Oprah's been talking about problems for 35 years, you know? So, like, where's the solution? And if we have solutions, let's put them into place and let's help one another put them into place, you know?
Right.
So I think for me, that's like, I was telling Susan a few months ago, there's like, not having, going into different houses, you know, whether the theater houses, performing arts centers, whatever, and not seeing the female representation or, you know, the all-inclusive representation of anybody in there. It's just like all dudes all the time, you know. Right. And not that I don't like dudes, I like the dudes, you know, and I'm appreciative of them as well, but I feel like this is, women have this rare ability to be able to see the whole package, you know, to see the whole scope of things, and to be able to bring that to the forefront, I think, and help one another get the messages out there that we need to get, and the action steps to them as well, I think, is great. And that is something that you did. You took the action step. And like you said, it's scary. That's your fear, is that it's going to disappear, you know, mm-hmm. and we want to help you not to let that disappear. Like, I think we're all saying the same
help
thing.
Help the momentum continue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Keep the snowball rolling. Yeah. Whatever we were saying. Yeah. Help right. that momentum. So I would love to jump on a letter and write one with you or help you somehow, you know, and just keep going and say, yeah, we support this and we want to see, you know, more people of color and we want to see, you know, more diversity in theater as well as this place and that place and, you know,
right.
festivals and wherever else, you know,
right.
Cause even like what the Shakespeare festivals that I've been to, it's all a bunch of white people.
Yeah.
I'm like, you
oh
know,
yeah.
Come on. Othello. Like, come on.
Right.
Like there should be some more people of color out here. People like, what is going right. on? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to go off on tangent there for a minute. And I was like, ah, it irritates me. You know?
Yeah. In some places I've recently worked, there are some theaters that are at least trying. The last production I did in person before everything shut down was at Kansas City Rep. And that was probably the most quote unquote diverse place that I have ever worked. And not only was the team diverse, but it was an emotionally safe place to work, and it was a creatively safe place to work. And that's I think they are a great example of what to do as a theater company. So I just wanted to shout them out.
All right. Kansas City Rep doing the thing.
Yeah.
That was one of my questions is like, who is doing it right? Like, who do you feel is doing the right thing? So thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
That's awesome. Have you heard from any of those theaters or companies that are behind you that are like, yeah, I mean, you said you're getting a lot of great feedback, but have you heard of any that are wanting to do this, want to jump on the bandwagon with you and help write policy and do things like that?
Well, actually, every theater company that I've worked for that has read the letter reached out to me kind of expressing like a thank you for saying what I said, but also trying to hint at the question of are they part of the problem, you know?
Are you talking about us?
Yeah.
Oh crap, we just got found out. Yeah.
Right. Which is specifically why I didn't name drop in my letter as much as I wanted to.
Yeah.
I would say of all the companies I've worked for, there's probably two specific theaters that I was specifically talking about in my letter. And one of them did reach out to me, but I didn't express that that I was talking about them because I think they kind of know I was talking about them. And I have told many people the stories of specific things I've experienced at work, such as being called like racial names or just listening to people say terrible things that they shouldn't say. I've been hit on jobs.
Like physically?
Yes. My very first job in New York, and if anyone looks at my resume, they can probably connect the dots of what my first job was, and they'll know where this took place. But it was kind of like a training experience for one season, which was one problem. The second problem was at that time they were not paying the legal wage, but I still took the job regardless because I really wanted to move to New York. So that's another problem. And third, the leadership at that company was terrible. Many people didn't step into what they were supposed to be doing as a leader, and even people who are finishing the program now that have been reaching out to me have said many of the same problems that I've experienced there, they just went through. And so the company still hasn't fixed like their leadership issues. There was one production, my last production there before I quit, where there was a guest dance company coming in, and the stage manager and choreographer for that dance company, they were just not the friendliest people, which is okay. You know, you're always going to have like that. But it got to a point where, as I was the sound person for their show, the choreographer felt like it was okay where during a dress rehearsal where we had guests there, that because she felt like the volume of one of her songs was not up loud enough while her dancers were on stage, that she came up to me while I was at the board and like grabbed my arm and like hit me a little bit just to tell me to turn up the volume. While she was doing that, the stage manager was already in my ear telling me to turn the volume up a little bit. So it wasn't for her to come to me to say that. And I was very upset because this has everything up until that point, I felt like allowed her to feel as though it was okay for her to do something like that, because that's just how she was the entire rehearsal process. And when I talked to my bosses about it, I feel like they did not talk to the choreographer about what she did. Their only response was trying to get me not to quit and trying to get me not to file a lawsuit against them for allowing her to hit me, which is why I quit. So it's things like that I think designers and technicians go through a lot, especially if you're really young trying to work, if you're a woman trying to work, and if you're a person of color trying to work, because there's so many things we can't say and can't do out of fear of never being able to work again simply because we're Black or because we're 21 trying to build work experience, you know?
I think that, to me, that's the scary part, too. Like you said about being younger or being a person of color, is, like, where do you have to latch on to? You know, where are your allies that can help you? You know, like, for instance, you know, I'm in my 40s and I've been around for a while. Like, I'm very much about, like, hey, latch onto my, you know, shoulder here and let me help you if I can, you know, get in this world a little more, because I'm not so concerned about being blackballed. You know, I have years of experience, and so you can't treat this person that way. And I will say it, and I don't give a shit. Like, I'm going to tell you, you can't do that. It's just not human. Like, be a freaking human. Like, I get mad. I'm so mad about it. Like, what the hell is wrong with people, you know? And if you've got an issue with somebody, let's talk about it like humans instead of reacting in anger and ridiculousness and then not giving them a job. Because what does that accomplish, you know? It's nothing except your power trip and your arrogance is why you wouldn't give somebody a job. You know? And that's got to go away. It's just got to stop. So I think, to me, that's what I love about the Sound Girls, you know, is getting to know all these other women that have done this industry before me, even, you know, whose shoulders I can stand on, and they're allowing that. Like, yeah, come on, let me show you the way up the ladder, you know. And like you were saying, like, to be able to put this letter out into the Broadway sphere, you know, there's got to be some other women of color that have been in Broadway for years that have just not wanted to be blackballed. So they've been the one person there, you know, for years. And so they haven't been able to say anything. But now that there's becoming more people around and you're brave enough to stand up and say, hey, enough's enough. Hopefully that'll bring these people out of the woodwork too, you know? And and your bravery is bringing that about, and I I am in awe of that, of the fact that you're that brave to do it. But like, where do you get that? Where do you get that? Is that part of your upbringing? Like, you know, did your parents teach you to just step out and do that? Or are you just all, you know, I don't know how to say that. I am fumbling today with my words.
Thank you.
But we kind of talked about this a little bit early because I don't know how else to say it other than, you know, where'd you get the balls to do something like that?
Yeah.
You know, even though that's a horrible explanation, but that's the only term I can think of.
I mean, I don't see what I did as being brave. Maybe like 10 years from now, when I'm a little older, I look back and say, wow, I was really young and that was brave of me to do what I did. I would do the same thing if I was 30 or 40 or 50. I think people see what I did as brave because I'm young, and I could be wrong about that, but that I think that's why people see my letter as being brave, because I do have so much to lose right now at my age. But I think many people who design or work in tech have the same capacity to do exactly what I did.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take a like superhero type of quality to use your voice. You just have to know how to get on a computer and the letter and find someone that will hopefully put it on a platform for you. And I will say, maybe the only sense of being brave I had to conjure up for this is that I'm not the most articulate person. I tell people I'm not the most intelligent example of a young woman in this country. There are many people smarter than me. There are many designers and technicians smarter than me. So I'm probably not the best person to have voiced what I voiced, but somebody needed to do it. So
well, thank you for being the someone that did it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I do believe you're brave no matter what age you are. Just thank being you. Able to put to put your thoughts and your anger into some terms and some words that people desperately need to hear in order to make a change in this country and in our world. So thank you. You are
thank
to be
you.
Commended for that. And we stand with you and next to you and let's do this. Let's
thank
keep
you.
Pushing down the walls, right?
Thank you so much.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you so much. We got a couple questions that we ask everybody, you know, when we do the podcast. One is just a simple little, like, what's your go-to beverage?
Go-to beverage? Water. Definitely water. That's usually all I drink, like 95% of the time.
Look at you being all healthy.
Yeah, right?
I'm still trying to get it. I got a little app that gets me some water that reminds
really?
Me to drink water. it reminds me to drink water every day, every couple hours or an hour or something. Do you have any resources that you can give us that you know of for hiring like more diverse production crews and things like that? Like if people are listening to this interview and they're thinking, man, I really do want to hire some more people other than, I mean, we promote the EQL directory on Facebook, I said, but Sound Girls, you know, and yeah, we launch it on our podcast, talk about that all the time. Do you know of other ones like theater related that are...
Yeah, there is a website called productionondeck.com. It is run by a very awesome man who now works for Disney, I think, but he is really great on like diversity and things like that. If you go to that website, there's a few different lists, mostly geared towards people who work in theater, and two of those lists has names, emails, and phone numbers of people of color who work as sound designers and technicians, lighting, costumes, et cetera, et cetera. But there's quite a few different lists on here for different fields of work and the people who do those work. So check out that website. It's productionondeck.com.
Productionondeck.com. We'll put those in the show notes too. And I think there was a couple on your letter that were recognized at the bottom two. We'll add those as well.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Anything else you want to share with us about this whole production letter that you wrote, or this whole backstage letter? I don't know what you called it.
Yeah. I saw someone in a Facebook group say something really important recently that many theater workers have been writing letters, and at some point we have to move beyond letters and do something else. And I 100% agree with what that person said. And one thing I plan on doing is maybe a year from now or a little sooner, I want to do some type of like research that really digs into just how much of a change have theaters made within the past year. I know some of the larger theaters plan on doing a 2021 season, and I'm really curious to see how they plan on staffing those seasons. So I think the next step beyond writing about these problems is taking a look at what has been done within the past year, and then from there trying to create more policies and really getting these theater companies or production companies to sit down and take a look at exactly what problem they're causing, and talking with them about how they can change those problems. So yeah,
that's awesome. Well, any of you listeners out there that can help in any way with that, Twee, how do we get a hold of you?
Oh, you can email me, tweebackstage@gmail.com. That's the easiest way. No angry letters. I'm not going to read them, but anything else you can reach out to me about.
I just threw you under the bus there. Like, hey, just throw your email out there in the sphere here. but I think, like, bringing this and talking about it, there's going to be some people who are like, oh man, I could totally add to this and I could totally help. They just needed the platform from with to jump from, and you provided that. So I want to make sure they could get in touch with you if they've got some ideas and ways to research this too, and to help have more people of color recognized in our industry. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Sound Girls' mission is to inspire and empower the next generation of women in audio. Our mission is to create a supportive and inclusive community for women, non-binary people, people of color, and all marginalized groups working in audio and music production, providing the tools, knowledge, and support to further their careers.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. You can find out more information on the website, soundgirls.org.